think I told Matt, like, I wanted to get it done the first time we talked about it, but, you know, I knew it takes time. So it's a lot of back and forth. It's a lot of conversation. It's a lot of emails. It's a lot of text messages. It's a lot of work. I'm not going to get into what the gaps were. All I know is what we came to was a fair deal on both sides. We made some concessions. They made some concessions. I never was to the point where I thought it wasn't going to get done. I'm just glad that it did.
It was important. You know, it wasn't something that all along I knew was going to be the case. As it got into training camp a little bit, I realized that we have an extremely talented team, and for us to be worrying about my contract situation or what it was going to be a disservice to the organization, to our team, to the players in the locker room. So I wanted to get this thing done and kind of realize that during training camp. It took everybody to get it done in the time frame it did, and including Tom Connan and my guys at CA. So I just couldn't have done it, obviously, without those guys, and appreciate it. I'm just glad that we're getting this thing wrapped up and we can move on to the season.
Matthew, what's it like being the highest paid player in the NFL?
It's not much different than I feel yesterday. You know, I work extremely hard, no matter salary is for the year or anything like that. And, you know, it's just part of what comes with the position of playing quarterback in this league and playing it at a high level, and that's what I strive to do. And I don't do that for anything other than the guys in the locker room, the coaching staff that puts in all the hard work to get us ready to play, and my teammates. Obviously couldn't have gotten to this point without a lot of help from all those guys.
I'm happy for Matt. I mean, Matt and I have battled over the years. Really respect him as a player. I love watching him throw. He can do it from a number of different platforms and arm angles, and so I think he's one of the good guys in the league, a quarterback.
What else are you going to do? That's the question I come back to every time. I also never understand why fans get so upset about how much money one of their players gets paid. It's not about whether he's making $50 million guaranteed. It's about whether you can sign players to support him, and they still can. And this is a guy, by the way, who started 96 straight starts. He's been durable. His efficiency has improved over recent years. His interceptions have lessened.
When you have that much money invested in a quarterback position, it makes you have to be more efficient with your cap dollars elsewhere, but that's the name of the game. So I'll tell you what, so I would rather do that than the flip side, meaning I don't have a quarterback that I think I can win with, and then the pressure is on to make sure I nail the rest of the 52 roster positions on the football team. Because if you think that's easier, then you just don't quite get how tough it is really to build a roster. Matthew Stafford gives the Detroit Lions, to use an old acronym that is kind of worn out, the best chance to win by far. And if you don't sign him, you deserve to be run out of there as a front office guy.
They will contend today, they being Ezekiel's camp, that virtually all of her injuries occurred outside of that timeline. And during one of those incidents, it's also asserted that those injuries came from a physical fight that occurred outside of a club the day of his birthday. They also are talking about the fact that they do not like that the alleged victim was not interviewed by the independent panel, nor the commissioner. So in a case where there's he said, she said, in terms of different versions of what happened, that credibility is key. Because even though you have photographs that show injuries, what I'm told that Ezekiel Camp will be contending is that what the metadata can't show is who did it and how those injuries came about.
Cleveland values that draft pick. They value that draft pick in a post-LeBron potential scenario there. They can't get a pick that high from anybody else. They really can't. And they have found in their first round going through this, they can't get a young player who might end up having greater value than that really high pick. I still would be surprised if these teams let this thing die, but it's not done. It's not complete.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to Yon Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Hope you're having an outstanding Wednesday. 12 minutes after 3 as we get you rolling. Maniloff going to join us in about an hour at about 4:10. Talk about some news out of the sea on the other side. Two moves by the sea. Talking about the Cleveland Browns. Joe Haden, gonzo, cut, released. A stunner? Probably not. Time for him to go? Absolutely. Sad because of the kind of a person, not just the player. Because quite frankly, in the last 2 or 3 years, he was nowhere near a top-tier cornerback. Injuries took care of that. But a great person and a great spokesman for that franchise and for that community. So how about your boy Joe Haden being gone? And how about yet another first-round draft pick flop also being dealt within the past hour? Literally within the past hour, Cam Irving the flop, an absolute just horrific pick along with Justin Gilbert, another horrific pick, along with Trey Richardson, another horrific pick, along with Brandon Whedon, another horrific pick, another Johnny Manziel, another horrific pick. You run out of room, you run out of time, you run out of breath, you run out of energy explaining how bad some of these individuals are and how they don't belong in the NFL. Well, this is just the latest. Cam Irving has been dealt to the Kansas City Chiefs for a fifth-round pick. He was a first-round pick just 2 years ago. First-round pick, and he's gone. For a fifth-rounder just 2 years later. What kind of talent evaluators do they have? My goodness gracious. I could go on and on. Oh, what the hell? Let me go on and on. Let me go on and on with just the flat-out flops. I mentioned Richardson. I mentioned Whedon. I mentioned Manziel. I mentioned Gilbert. I mentioned, help me out, Irving. I mentioned, I didn't mention Barkevious Mingo. Flop. Another one. Who else, Cushlin? I know there are more over the last just 3 or 4 years or 5 years for that team and their unbelievable inability to identify decent talent in the NFL draft.
Yeah, there's definitely
there's
some. You're making me look up some of the drafts.
I'm trying not to go all the way back to Brady Quinn. You know what I mean? Because now we're talking, I don't know, 3 or 4 different iterations of a front office.
But, right.
We'll do that later. But the Browns made a move, two moves today. They cut Joe Hayden, who made 2 Pro Bowls. He certainly was worth his first-round pick, 7th overall way back in 2010. He did his job for the most part. Injuries set in, and he simply began to provide us with our Sunday afternoon toast. If you like breakfast food, you love Joe Hayden because he was toasted on a regular basis, which is why I wasn't too terribly sad to see this happen, although, like I said, from a personal standpoint, nice guy, great leader, good franchise guy, good community presence. Sad to see him go. All right, so that's one NFL note. The other one, of course, as you heard in the top of the montage, Bob Quinn, the man in charge of deciding where dollars and cents go in the D, north of our state line. You heard a little bit from Matthew Stafford himself then, Aaron Rodgers, Lewis Riddick, Jeff Darlington, everybody weighing in on the NFL's new richest man in the world, the richest man in the NFL. Well, shouldn't say that. The owners are all richer than the players. But the new richest player in NFL history is, of course, Lions quarterback Matthew Stafford. And there's a legitimate question and a debate as to whether or not Matthew Stafford deserves that, and that's what everybody is talking about. I think we kind of have come to the agreement. I think almost everybody has, as you heard, especially Darlington there at the end. Kush, can you play Darlington? Give me that part of this. I know we heard, like I said, Quinn and Stafford and Rye, a lot of voices on this, which is fine. And Rodgers and Riddick, maybe even play Riddick too. Riddick and Darlington at the end, I think, were some of the strongest voices there about the way this whole thing is supposed to go down and how it is that, you know, if you wouldn't do this, then you wouldn't belong in an NFL front office if you wouldn't pay this guy all of this money. He's durable. He's been reliable. His efficiency has gone up in recent years, et cetera. Kush, let me hear some of that again because some of that was very strong.
What else are you going to do? That's the question I come back to every time. I also never understand why fans get so upset about how much money one of their players gets paid. It's not about whether he's making $50 million guaranteed. It's about whether you can sign players to support him, and they still can. And this is a guy, by the way, who started 96 straight starts. He's been durable. His efficiency has improved over recent years. His interceptions have lessened.
When you have...
That was Jeff Darlington, yes?
Yes, that was Jeff Darlington.
Okay, and he's right about a lot of that. He really is. I'm not going to say that he's not right about that, but I think while we all agree that what else are you going to do? I mean, he could have just stopped right there, right?
Mm-hmm.
He, Riddick, Rodgers, everybody else who has spoken out on this. Yesterday we played some of the Stephen A. and you know, a number of other ESPN personalities. We could have just stopped with, what else are you going to do? That ultimately is the be-all, end-all argument in favor of paying Matthew Stafford more money than any player in the history of this league has ever been paid. What else are you going to do? Because NFL quarterbacks are very hard to come by. NFL durable quarterbacks are very, very hard to come by. NFL franchise quarterbacks, even if they don't win playoff games, even if they don't beat winning teams very often, as we all know, that number has come out, 5-46 in Matthew Stafford's career against teams that have winning records.
what else are you going to do? Because if you give him away, or, you know, chase him away by giving him a low ball offer, of course, is what I'm saying, somebody else is going to pay him that money, and you're going to be scrambling to find somebody who is durable and franchise-ish as a quarterback. I don't know if I would term Matthew Stafford as a franchise quarterback. That's not a knock. Not at all. I'd call him a franchise-ish quarterback. When I talk about a franchise quarterback, I'm talking about the Brady Rodgers type. I don't know that I would go franchise quarterback, but because of the lack of real franchise quarterbacks, because it is so hard to find even just, you know, reliable starters, a game manager who won't cost me games by turning it over a bunch of times, somebody like an Alex Smith who's reliable, it's hard to find those guys. I mean, look at the number of teams in the National Football League right now who would like to have Alex Smith as their starter. And I say that not to be mean and denigrate Alex Smith in such a way when I talk about him being just so vanilla, you know, just so blah. He's just a guy. He's never going to be a star, but he's never going to be a stiff. He's never going to be, you know, a champion, but he's never going to be 1-15. He's just a quarterback that you can rely on, that you can throw out there on a regular basis. How many teams would like to have him right now? I can name, you know, a ton of them right off the top. I promise you, you know, a team like Minnesota would rather have him than a Bradford. I promise you that the Bears would rather have an Alex Smith right now than have to count on Mike Glennon starting while they groom Mitch Trubisky. I can pretty much guarantee you that the San Francisco 49ers would have him, and they used to, of course, would have him starting now over Brian Hoyer. The Rams would probably have him starting over project top pick overall last year, Jared Goff. You can probably be assured that the Jets would have him right now as their starting quarterback. These are just, and this is just a guy, Jim, that nobody would call a franchise quarterback. He's just a solid quarterback, and they're hard to find. They're hard as hell to find. So in a world in which it's hard to find solid starters, where that's difficult, to get somebody like Stafford, who has put up some really, really amazing numbers through the years, despite not being an extraordinarily successful quote-unquote winner, well, of course, what Darlington said there is right. You could have just ended with, what else are you going to do? Go back into the draft? Let somebody else sign him and then go back into the draft and look for somebody like him who will give you the same kind of production while you still have to find a way to build around that guy, whoever he may be? And the answer is no, you don't want to do that. So I think we've all come to some consensus that the Lions had no choice in paying Stafford what they paid him. I think the ridiculing of people who question it is a little over the top, because, like I said, they're looking for what are Lions fans looking for first and foremost, Jim Cushlin? A guy who's just going to barely squeak them into the playoffs and lose 3 out of 8 years. They've only made the playoffs 3 out of 8 years and lose the first round. Or somebody who's going to take them deep into the playoffs and give them a chance to appear in the first Super Bowl in franchise history.
Yeah, I would think that's kind of what Lions fans are looking for. I mean, you want to get to the playoffs and finally win a game. I mean, we've gone over that number countless times on this program, and now that they're starting to mention it nationally again because of this signing, I think, you know, a lot of Lions fans... You want more, obviously, as does every fan base, but just winning a playoff game would cure a lot of ills right now.
Yeah, I mean, everybody wants more. I mean, if you make it to the NFC Championship game and lose, especially if you do it multiple times, you're like, damn it, I want something to put us over the top and get us to the Super Bowl. If you're a Lions fan and you haven't had a playoff win since 1991, I mean, Jiminy Christmas, that's a couple of generations. I mean, really? Pretty much, depending on how fast you turn them over, you want something better than what you're getting. But you also have to recognize that there might not be better out there in this passers league where there just aren't enough passers. So they want somebody to do better than what Stafford has done, but they recognize that there are far more worse players than what Stafford has done than there are better ones. And they're not accessible if they're better than that. So to me, the consensus is, yes, they had no choice. What else did you want them to do, as Darlington said? But for me, the flip side of that is the tier component. I explained this yesterday, and I won't get all over it again. But to me, you cannot put a guy like Matthew in line with the other top-tier quarterbacks to be, okay, here's the line when my term is up, when my contract is up. That was political for them. When my term is up, I want to be reelected to it. No, no. When my contract is up and it's time for a new deal, I'm going to eclipse the highest amount given to the last guy in my top tier. And to me, he's not top tier. To me, it's a very small top tier. It's not top 10, top tier. And I think it's very small. You know, the likes of Brady and Rodgers and Breeze and probably Roethlisberger and Luck and Flacco, Ryan. That's maybe six guys, seven guys, however many names I just did. To me, that's it. The top of the next tier is probably Rivers, and then probably Stafford, and probably the likes of Cam Newton and Flacco, and Russell Wilson's got to be in that group, and we can go through it over and over and over again. But to me, if you're not in the top tier, you don't get to be in line to be the next contract that breaks the bank, that sets the market. To me, Matthew hasn't crossed into that neighborhood where he gets to set the market. And that's the end of the story. You don't get me wrong. Not saying that the Lions shouldn't have paid him. Bob Quinn did what Bob Quinn had to do, as everyone would agree. But to me, it's just, it doesn't sit well on the outside looking in as a fan who just says, you know, you might be, you know, take it to another position. It's hard to do. It's hard to do. I'll try to do it. Who's the best starter in Major League Baseball right now, Kush? Would we probably agree that of course, when he's not injured as he has been, but Clayton Kershaw, over the course of the last 4 or 5 years, has had a run like no pitcher in baseball history. I mean, eclipsing the numbers of some of the greatest of all time. Would we agree it's Kershaw? Oh, I think I heard the phone, which means I heard Kush answering it, so he can't do it. To me, it's probably Kershaw. So, because he's the best. And then let's say we can make a list of the five best starters in Major League Baseball, whatever they are to you. You know, and if it's a Kershaw, you know, Sale, Scherzer, who else do you want to, maybe Kluber?
Yeah, I think Kluber has to be involved in that list now.
All right, and a fifth one, whatever it might be, because it's irrelevant to the point to name them all. But it's like then somebody else's ace of their staff, who's not on the level of the guys that I just mentioned, but he's the franchise guy, the ace of a rotation, of a pitching rotation. His contract is up. Well, it's my turn. Okay, I'm the ace of this staff, and I might not be as good as those guys, but I have to exceed the amount that the last guy there got. I need more than whatever Sale got or whatever Kershaw got or whatever Scherzer got or whatever Kluber got or whatever, because I'm the next ace for my team. I'm the ace for my team, and I'm next in line. Nobody is going to say that's the right thing to do. And yet that's what football has become, and that's where the controversy comes in. Well, because I'm the best quarterback on my team, and there aren't a whole lot of people like me, I get to eclipse guys that are far better than me in setting the new market. And that just doesn't sit well with some people, myself included. And that's just, you know, at the end of the day, that's where we come down. NBA, too. Who's the best player for the Sacramento Kings? I don't know. I literally don't know. Used to be Boogie Cousins up until mid-season this past year. Who's the best player left in Sacramento? I don't know, but when his contract comes up, he doesn't get to eclipse Steph Curry's number. Steph Curry just set the new market, right? Steph Curry just set the new market, got a $200 million contract. LeBron James complained and said it ought to be $400 million. Got a $201 million contract, but he's the best player just because the best player on another team rises up and says, okay, I'm the ace. I'm the franchise quarterback of my NBA team, to mix the metaphor. Therefore, I get to make the more than what the last guy just signed for. No, 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 no. You're not on his level. You don't get that money. Matthew is not on Tom Brady's level. He's not on Aaron Rodgers' level. He's not on Ben Roethlisberger's level, Drew Brees' level. He's not on these guys' levels who have won in the playoffs, who have won championships, who continue to do the things that lead their teams to victories against teams that have winning records, playoff victories, and on down the line. You're just not there yet. And so, therefore, just like the Sacramento Kings' best player shouldn't out-earn Steph Curry, Matthew should not out-earn some of these other guys. And Jim, if you have anything to add, that's
no, fine. No, it's one of those situations of it is what it is. I mean, you know, we've had this debate, we've had this talk for a while now, because as we first mentioned yesterday, you know, this shouldn't be a surprise to any of us, any of you who've listened to this show whenever we've had a Lions guest on for the last 6 to 8 months. Eventually this question comes up about Stafford's extension, and we knew it was going to be sky high, but we also knew the Lions, you know, were in this particular position that they had to unfortunately do that. They didn't have any other choice. Let's say it this way, Bob. Yes, he's not in that top elite category. I think he's in that secondary category, yep, as you do.
Yep.
But if you're the Lions, your options are,
well, Darlington covered it.
Yeah, exactly.
What else are you going to do?
To do anything else means you open the door to being the Browns quarterback situation. And nobody wants that. It's really as simple as that to me. You don't want to be in that scenario. And for better or worse, the Lions will not be in that scenario now.
Hey, do you know, Kush, just because you brought that up, and this is totally out of left field on this.
Okay.
We talked about a month ago or something, and maybe more than one occasion, about the Browns' historic quarterback flops and failures. And
right,
the last time they had a really, really great Pro Bowl quarterback was Bernie Kosar, probably in 92, right before they released him in 93. And we talked about how the Chicago Bears have actually had a worse situation than the Browns. If you take a look back at their history, Jay Cutler put up some numbers, but of course was terrible. Did not win, was not a leader, was not respected, and did not deliver on anything. And he was the best they have had, probably going back all the way, as we have, you know, tracked Harbaugh and Tom Zach and the likes of these kinds of guys. And I don't have them all memorized, but that's because none of them are memorable.
Right.
But the last time they had a Pro Bowl quarterback who's a star, particularly because he led them to a championship, or at least he rode the one of the great defenses of all time to a championship, Jim McMahon, in 1985. Their quarterback situation has been even worse. And if you go back before McMahon, you might have to go all the way back to Sid freaking Luckman in the 40s. No kidding. The Bears have been that bad as far as quarterbacks go, worse than the Browns, because at least with the Browns, you know, you look at Bernie Kosar in 92, and he came aboard in the, mid-1980s, and he was a Pro Bowler a few times, took him to a couple of AFC championship games, and et cetera, et cetera. And to go back further than that, you at least can stop at the NFL MVP 1981, Brian Sipe.
Right.
They had that. And then, of course, if you really want to go all the way back like I did to Sid Luckman, you can go back to the 50s with Otto Graham, who's one of the greatest of all time, one of the greatest winners of all time. Different type of quarterbacking situation, but still it is what it is. Anyway, the reason I brought all that up is the Jets situation is one that would make the Lions look incredibly stable. Who would you say the Jets' best quarterback has been since 1967 or 1969, beg pardon, the year that Joe Namath shocked the world with his guaranteed victory over the NFL champion Colts.
Ooh.
Since Namath, who, by the way, is one of the most overrated guys ever to be put into the Hall of Fame.
He just happened to have that moment to be the winning quarterback in what is still the most important football game ever played.
I completely agree. That's correct. That's what merged the leagues. That's what gave the AFL credibility and brought them together to create what we now have. So to me, they might even go earlier than that having their troubles. But who has been their best quarterback? You could make an argument that the best guy they've had since then was Chad Pennington. And Chad Pennington was terrible. I mean, they had Richard Todd, who tried to do
the names
some
that percolated in my head was laughably the Sanchez. There was a point in his veteran days when Vinny Testaverde, and then for some reason, I actually want to say Kenny O'Brien.
Ken O'Brien, but who was taken in 83 in the Marino Elway class, who ended up being what? I mean, what?
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing.
The fact that we're going to the Kenny O'Brien, well, if you're talking Jets quarterbacks, shows you where they've been.
I think I'd go to Richard Todd above him, probably. I remember Richard Todd having some games throwing to Wesley Walker, All-Pro Wesley Walker. I remember some things there. So, anyway, the Jets have been just as abysmal. So to that point, the reason I bring all those things up is because as we discuss Matthew Stafford's value to the Lions, let's acknowledge there are franchises that would owners that would cut off a limb to have Matthew Stafford as their quarterback, as they've starved for one, as long as the Bears have starved for one, as good as Stafford, as long as the Browns have starved for one that would be as good as Stafford, as long as the likes of the Jets have starved for one as good as Stafford. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is what's really amazing to me is that the position is so hard to fill that when you have somebody who fills it even capably, let alone with a franchise-ish quality to him like Stafford is, he suddenly becomes the highest paid player in the history of the sport. And that to me is just, it's bizarre. It's not something I like, but I understand. And that's where we'll have to leave it as we give you the stat of the day.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents The Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, Wings, Beer, Sports.
B-Dub's Wild Stat of the Day, Giancarlo Stanton continues his home run tear. Actually, Jim, I don't know if I like the phrasing of that. Giancarlo Stanton ended his homerless streak of one game by hitting his 51st.
That is a funnier way to say it. I'll give you that.
I mean, you know, it's weird. It stood out more that he didn't homer on Monday than he did homer yesterday. Giancarlo Stanton continues his tear, hitting his 51st last night, his 18th for the month of August. That ties the August record set by Rudy York for the 1937 Detroit Tigers. That's right. Stan, with two games left in August, is just two homers shy of tying the all-time record for home runs in any month at 20, which was set by Sammy Sosa in June of 1998. And, Kush, as long as we're on wild stats there, I'm going to extend that one further because I heard it this morning.
Okay.
Listening to Mike and Mike. He is also one shy of the most home runs ever hit in back-to-back months.
Really?
Back-to-back calendar months. He has 30 in July and August now of this season. Okay?
Okay.
He has 30. Only one guy has more in back-to-back months. Care to guess who it is?
It's got to be one of those guys up at the top of the list, so I'm going to go Maris.
Wrong.
Ooh.
It is the man who should have been your 1995 American League Most Valuable Player.
Oh, how
Albert
about
Bell
that?
Albert Bell hit 31 in August and September back-to-back.
To get to the 50,
To get to 50 homers and 50 doubles, 52 doubles to be precise. Right? Was it 50? Yes, 50 homers and 52 doubles.
Yes.
So Giancarlo Stanton can tie Albert Bell with one today or two today or whatever. He's got two more days, as you point out, today and tomorrow, to try to tie that for the most home runs in back-to-back months.
Since you brought up Albert Bell in 95 real quick, It's that 95 for Bell, which is why anyone says, well, he got messed up because he was hitting in the home run derby. Hogwash. Albert Bell himself said he hit more homers in the second half of 95 because of the derby.
How about that? Yeah, and that might be a little bit counterintuitive because we have seen so many other guys. Aaron Judge, the latest example. That might be counterintuitive that you have a whole body of work here, if you will, of people who have kind of struggled in the second half with their power stroke after doing the home run derby. But there you go, Albert Bell. As he was in many aspects of his life and career, is charting his own path. He is a very different cat. 3:36. I'll get about it with our Sports Center coming here. Got a lot more stuff to discuss, including the release of Joe Hayden. Where might he go? The trade of Cameron Irving to the Kansas City Chiefs. The Browns are just flat out gutting their roster and kind of starting over with young guys. Maybe kind of a money ball type of situation going on there. But, so we'll get into all of that. Kyrie Irving. Suddenly there's another team in the trade mix. If things don't get resolved with the Celtics, there's another team looking to get involved in the Kyrie Irving conversation. We'll tell you who that is. And Aaron Rodgers has some thoughts on Colin Kaepernick. Everybody else does. Why shouldn't Rodgers? We'll give you his thoughts, and I have some responses on that as well. So we still have a ton of work to do. Fortunately, we got a lot of time to do it right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, we do continue now at 3:45 right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket with a reminder, fantasy football time is a-coming. As a matter of fact, it's pretty much here. Have you had your draft yet? If you're a fantasy football commissioner, let me tell you what to do. Get to Buffalo Wild Wings. That's what you want to do. You want to make a great first impression with your league and your owners. Have the draft party at B-Dubs. You're going to get instant credibility. You're also going to get a free draft kit, along with a special draft feast of boneless wings, three sides, and three shareables, all at a special price to feed your whole league. So come on and start your fantasy football season off on the right foot at Buffalo Wild Wings at participating locations while supplies last. And don't forget the B-Dubs Fast Break Lunch Menu, because there you get all the highlights from the regular menu at discounted prices every Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. That's Buffalo Wild Wings, wings, beer, sports. All right, Kush, speaking of sports, let's shift the conversation from the D, where we talked NFL football and Matthew Stafford, to the C, out to the East. Were you surprised that they were not able, or when they were not able, to swing a trade for Joe Hayden as they announced yesterday they were doing? Were you surprised that they just flat out cut him? He's not good enough to even make the team as their third or fourth cornerback? Is that what they're saying?
That does surprise me a little bit. I mean, you know, Joe Hayden has a reputation around the league when he's not hurt of being a very, very solid corner. So I figured there'd be some kind of small trade. I mean, my goodness, if you're able to get any kind of draft pick for Cam Irving, you should have been able to get something, you know, for Joe Hayden. Now, again, probably part of what played into this was some of the injuries, especially the last couple of years that he's had.
Sure, some of the money.
That's the other interesting part about it, too. Where did I write this down? Yeah, he's owed $4 million this season.
He was going to be paid $11.1
million. He was going to be paid $11 million, but now...
$11 million is what it was going to cost somebody to take him on in a trade if they took on his contract. So, and you knew full well nobody was going to do that, and that's probably why everybody sat and said yesterday and said, yeah, keep looking for a trading partner for him. We know you're going to cut him. You're not going to pay him that. And that's why they're doing it, I think, probably as much as performance. It's kind of a combination of performance and cost. And everybody knew, hey, we can sign him for our own deal, obviously a much more team-friendly contract once you cut him.
Yeah, but either way, I'm still kind of surprised that it went down like this. I mean, when I first read the stuff yesterday that they were looking to maybe trade him, I'm thinking, okay, I mean, I'd like to, in theory, have a healthy Joe Hayden as a veteran to help some of these kids on this team. But if you're going to trade him, okay, it's Joe Hayden. You should be able to get something out of him. So clearly, in the 24-hour span since that came out and right now, clearly they weren't liking what they were hearing on the other end. And you're right, it probably had to do with some of the $11 million that he would be owed if somebody picked him up in a trade. And for what it's worth, the Browns will be able to have a reduced amount that they pay him if somebody, now that he's on waivers, picks him up, you know, after that.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned his injuries. He missed 11 games in 2015 with a finger injury and a concussion. And then last year in 2016, he missed three games and played through two groin issues that were probably... he shouldn't have played in. Should have missed more games because it cost him some of his effectiveness. And those groin issues required postseason surgery. So, quite obviously, Joe Hayden is not the player he was, and he's certainly not worth the $11 million. Even to be, as you say, you know, to teach or mentor or whatever some of the younger cornerbacks, you don't have a mentor like that for $11 million against your cap. And so they didn't want to pay that, and so he has been released. Now the question is, where does Joe Hayden go? And by the way, classy
yes.
response from Joe Hayden. I want to read what Joe said. He issued a statement via Instagram. Isn't it amazing how things have changed like that? It used to be he would release a statement through his agent, and it would be sent to the Associated Press or to whomever, and then they would run it. And
or if they were popular enough and made enough, they'd take out a full-page ad in the next day's paper in your area.
Yeah, that too. But, I mean, they used to have to rely on traditional media to reach the
right.
Masses. One way or the other. And now they don't have to rely on traditional media at all. It's like, I don't need any of you. I'm just going to put it on Instagram, and here it is. I would first like to take the time to thank the Browns fans all around the world from the bottom of my heart for making Cleveland a happy home for me for the past 7 years. I want to also thank my coaches, the organization, and especially my teammates who have become family. And this last line is the one that I love. My God doesn't make mistakes, and I know the future is bright. I love that. Just personal, you know, and you don't have to second it or anybody else does, but I just really, really like the idea. This is not a mistake. God doesn't make mistakes. This is what's supposed to happen because I'm supposed to have something else brighter happen in my life. The future is bright. And what a great attitude. He's always had a great attitude.
Yeah.
Even if he always hasn't made great plays, he's got a great attitude. He was a great presence in that community. So the real question is will a change of location, change of... what's the word I'm looking for?
Change of scenery?
Scenery. I kept wanting to say scenario. My head is sitting there going, change of scenario doesn't sound right. Scenery. They're all related to the same root word. Anyway, will the proverbial change of scenery help him get back to the kind of form that the Browns used to know? And worse yet, will that change of scenery lead him to wearing black and gold and oppose the Browns in week one of the season, which starts in about, what, 10 days? Because that's what most of the analysts are suggesting, Kush, that the team that might be first to jump on signing Joe Haden might be the division favorite Pittsburgh Steelers, who are in a very difficult situation of their own as far as cornerbacks. They've got very little depth there. They might even need a new starter at one of the two positions. And how about it if Joe Haden were to jump over and join the hated rival Steelers and then actually face his old team? Have him covering Corey Coleman in week one when the Browns and Steelers get together. That would be something.
No, that would be. And I've already heard those grumblings, too, that the Steelers, of all people, may end up picking him up. That'll hurt for a little bit, but...
They need help there. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it makes sense, to at least bring him in and try. Not at $11 million.
Right.
But, and by the way, releasing him cost the Browns $3.2 million in cap space this year and $3.2 million next year, if you were wondering how that whole thing works. He was going to make $11.2 million this year, $10.4 million in 2018, $10.4 million more in 2019. So they owed him a bunch of money. They owed him roughly $32 million.
Yep.
Somewhere in that neighborhood, and it's just simply going to cost them $3.2 million in cap space each year. And now they don't have to, of course, pay him the rest of that. So, anyway, continue, please.
And, so the point is, it's going to be a little rough, especially if he ends up in the black and gold for the Steelers and you see him on opening day. But I have no doubt within a week's time we will be reading of where Joe Haden signed, especially because if he's healthy, he's still one of the better corners in this league.
I'm having a hard time with that. What does better mean? What does better mean? Top half?
Top half. I'd say top half.
Corners in the league?
Top half, then.
Okay. In other words, he's an average player, then.
He might be more average now.
See, here's the thing. Joe Haden never got to the level that a lot of people thought that he would. When he was the number 7 overall pick in 2010, I think he went 7th overall, didn't he? When he was the top, first-round pick then, it was believed to be that Joe Haden was Darrell Revis. What Darrell Revis, came to be. What, now today's top corners, Richard Sherman, Patrick Peterson, all these, great elite cornerbacks. He was supposed to be the shutdown guy. Forget about his half of the field quarterbacks. You can't go over there. He never reached that. He did make 2 Pro Bowls, but he never reached that level. To me, he was kind of, Kush, since we're doing it on Stafford, he was kind of a Stafford of quarterbacks. To me, he was in the very next tier, at the top of the next tier, but in the next tier down from the great ones. And while that's a great player to have, when you take away some of the effectiveness because of the injuries, as you pointed out, now you're dropping from the second tier down to the third or fourth tier maybe, and even if it is still in the top half, it's just not something you can afford to play around with. It's not somebody that you can afford to pay that kind of money to and watch him, like I said, just kind of being a little clownish, get toasted on a regular basis on Sunday afternoons. And Antonio Brown was feasting on him the last couple of years. Speaking of, the Steelers, most of the, really great wideouts that he was assigned to over the last few years, even going back to 3-4 years before the real injuries set in, Joe Haden wasn't that shutdown guy that a lot of people felt like he should be.
No, and that's part of what the injuries and other things as time has gone on has done to him. And either way, he could still have a home on somebody's team should they want him. To me, it's that simple.
Yeah. There's no doubt about that. It is a little surprising to me that nobody wanted to trade for him, only because now, again, it's a frenzy. And his agent said he'll have a job by tomorrow. Don't worry about that. And it's true. Somebody is going to want him. He's only 28 years old. There's no question. And the only way you guarantee that you could have gotten him and avoided that frenzy is to trade something, like a fifth-round pick, like
right.
You got for Cameron Irving, to do that. So a little surprising nobody did that. But nobody wanted to take on that money. You could assure yourself you get him, but you don't want to take on a contract like that. Which you would have to do in a trade. You sign him now that he's a released free agent, and now you can settle. Negotiate your own deal with him, and obviously it'll be a lot less money. What about Irving? Surprised that Irving is gone?
No, not really. I this was one of those it's a matter of time kind of things. They've gone. They've had him go through so many different positions. He couldn't figure out in either of them. And I don't care what round it is, Bob. I'm glad the Browns got something back for him.
Browns? I was talking about Kyrie. No, I wasn't, actually. But how about that? That is interesting. Two different Irvings out of one city.
That's true.
Yeah, my only surprise, Jim, was that that they actually found somebody to give him a fifth-round pick because he's awful. He was awful at center when they tried him there. He was awful at guard when they tried him there. And now he was awful at right tackle since they have tried him there in this preseason. So to me, it really was only a matter of time. I don't know that any change of scenery is going to change anything for that cat. I just don't think he has it. He doesn't have the toughness. He doesn't have the technique. He doesn't have the strength. He doesn't have it. I don't care if he's in Kansas City or in Timbuktu. It's just not going to work for that guy.
No, it probably isn't. And the Browns are better off moving forward, you know, without him, get some other things straight on the line positions that he was competing for. And it's fine in a way for me on this. And again, I'm just glad it's fifth rounder, whatever. But at least they got something for him.
Yeah, get a bag of footballs, you know, something. I mean, you make a profit there just simply by addition by subtraction. I think it's fair to say. So those are a couple of the big NFL stories. We're going to talk more about them with our friend Dennis Manloff. I did want to comment on this as well before we go there. After the top of the hour, I want to talk about Colin Kaepernick, the latest, because, one of the great quarterbacks in the league has spoken up on this now. A lot of players have been very silent on Kaepernick. You know, mostly it's talking heads. It's Stephen A. and it's Mike and it's Mike and it's Schefter and it's this guy and that guy. And on local levels, it's guys like you and me talking about Colin Kaepernick and why he isn't on a roster. You don't hear a ton of players. And you certainly don't hear a ton of players who have the cachet of a guy like Aaron Rodgers. You know, you don't hear... you don't hear Brady and Rodgers and Roethlisberger and other guys who are, you know, the big dogs at the quarterback feeding trough talking too much about this. So when Aaron Rodgers, in an extended interview, which, by the way, included conversation on Matthew Stafford's big contract with the Lions, you played that at the top of the hour, Kush, in a wide-ranging interview with ESPN the magazine, he did indeed ask, or a comment, I should say, when asked, about Colin Kaepernick. And his takeaway is that, yes, he believes that Colin Kaepernick doesn't have a job in this league right now because of his protests. And my only comment on that, I'll make it very brief, is, duh, the protests are the reason, but they're not the main reason, nor are they the only reason. The protests are part of an equation. In other words, if he hadn't done this ridiculous protesting and been so controversial for so many, then no owners would fear bringing his marginal talent in to be their backup because they wouldn't fear the circus that came with it. But because he did the protests, those protests have created a circus, have created a distraction, have created an atmosphere and potential backlash that most owners don't want to deal with. And so his marginal talent doesn't outweigh all of those things. And that's the real bottom line here. Aaron Rodgers said that, yes, Colin Kaepernick is one of the best 64 quarterbacks in the world. Therefore, he should have one of the top two jobs on 32 teams. Okay, fine. All things being equal, he probably would. But the question isn't, is he one of the top 64? The question is, does his talent outweigh, in other words, risk versus reward, as I've often said, does his talent or the reward that comes from his production and productivity, does it outweigh the risk that comes from the backlash? Does the reward outweigh the risk of the distraction, of the circus that's going to make everybody in the locker room uncomfortable? That it's going to make people tired of having to answer questions about their new teammate? Do you support him? Will you kneel with him? Do you agree with them? What is your thought on protest? All of these things that nobody wants to answer. Why? Because their answers are going to hit Twitter in 0.2 seconds, and people are going to immediately judge. Twitter is the ultimate judgment zone. Whatever you say is going to be judged by Twitter, and later on by analysts and media and everything else, and you're going to be branded a racist, or you're going to be branded a supremacist, or you're going to be branded a radical, and nobody wants to deal with that. So is Aaron Rodgers right when he says that the reason Colin Kaepernick doesn't have a job is because of his protests? Yes, to a degree. But it's not because he's being blackballed because of the protests. It's not because he's not allowed to have that freedom of speech and expression. It's because owners are also allowed to say, dude isn't good enough to help me overcome all of the stuff he's going to bring with him. Trust me, if he could fling it like Aaron Rodgers, he'd be on a roster. But he flings it like Colin Kaepernick, and therefore he's not on a roster. So let's just get that cleared up right now. All right, it is 4 o'clock. Hour number two, Maniloff coming your way. We're going to talk a little bit more about some of these NFL situations. And I think we'll probably also have to talk about Major League Baseball because, Cush, isn't there a game being played right now? First game of a doubleheader up there in New York.
Indeed there is. And for the record, Tigers are also in action. So we'll update on all those.
Both teams leading. Indians lead the Yankees in the 8-2-1. The Tigers are leading the Colorado Rockies.
I love that one, too. That's a Justin Verlander in the National League Park helping his own cause with an RBI single. Love it.
Love those stories. And he does indeed now have a 2-0 lead in the top of the third in Colorado. Everybody hits in Coors, you know that, even pitchers. All right, time out for the top of the hour Sports Center. Right back after this on ESPN.
I think I told Matt, like, I wanted to get it done the first time we talked about it, but, you know, I knew it takes time. So it's a lot of back and forth. It's a lot of conversation. It's a lot of emails. It's a lot of text messages. It's a lot of work. I'm not going to get into what the gaps were. All I know is what we came to was a fair deal on both sides. We made some concessions. They made some concessions. I never was to the point where I thought it wasn't going to get done. I'm just glad that it did.
It was important. You know, it wasn't something that all along I knew was going to be the case. As I got into training camp a little bit, I realized that we have an extremely talented team, and for us to be worrying about my contracts situation or what it was going to be a disservice to the organization, to our team, to the players in the locker room. So I wanted to get this thing done and kind of realize that during training camp. It took everybody to get it done in the time frame it did, and including Tom Connan and my guys at CA. So I just couldn't have done it obviously without those guys, and appreciate it. I'm just glad that we're getting this thing wrapped up and we can move on to the season.
Matthew, what's it like being the highest paid player in the NFL?
It's not much different than I feel yesterday. You know, I work extremely hard no matter salary is for the year or anything like that. You know, it's just part of what comes with the position of playing quarterback in this league and playing it at a high level, and that's what I strive to do. And I don't do that for anything other than the guys in the locker room, the coaching staff that puts in all the hard work to get us ready to play, and my teammates. Obviously couldn't have gotten to this point without a lot of help from all those guys.
I'm happy for Matt. I mean, Matt and I have battled over the years. Really respect him as a player. I love watching him throw. He can do it from a number of different platforms and arm angles, and so I think he's one of the good guys in the league, a quarterback.
What else are you going to do? That's the question I come back to every time. I also never understand why fans get so upset about how much money one of their players gets paid. It's not about whether he's making $50 million guaranteed. It's about whether you can sign players to support him, and they still can. And this is a guy, by the way, who started 96 straight starts. He's been durable. His efficiency has improved over recent years. His interceptions have lessened.
When you have...
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed, rolling along 12 minutes after 4. Thanks for being with us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, where we are, Toledo's sports leader. And, big story of the day yesterday, the signing of Matthew Stafford to a contract that I think guarantees him 57 touchdown passes this season, right? He's got to throw 57 to earn the kind of money he just signed for as the richest contract in the history of the National Football League. He better throw 57 touchdowns. Now, you know that's not going to happen, and I know that's not going to happen. But as Jeff Darlington said there at the end, what else were they going to do? You know, if they didn't pay him that money, somebody else would have, and then they'd be back in the draft looking for another quarterback who might be as good as Stafford was, because that's pretty much all you can expect. All right, joining us now, and that was yesterday's top NFL story. Today, how about this one? I love this phrasing, by the way, on .com, ESPN.com. That's so Browns. For the second time in a decade, the Browns have parted with two first-round picks on the very same day. And joining us now to talk about things that are that so Browns is our good friend Dennis Maniloff, who covers those so Browns out there in Cleveland for the Cleveland.com, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, and the Northeast Ohio Media Group. D-Man, what's going on, brother?
Hey, Bob. Thanks for having me on, man.
Always a pleasure to have you on. What an amazing statistic. I did not realize it until .comers told us that it was back on, here it is. It was, now it's lost to me again. Here it is, March 15th, 2010. The Browns traded Brady Quinn, a first-rounder from 07, and linebacker Cameron Wimbley, a first rounder from 06, on the very same day. And on the same day they did, or likewise on the same day today, they release first round pick from 2010, Joe Hayden, and first round pick Cameron Irving from 2015 today. Just a very, very Brownsian type of thing for them to do. What's the big picture here, Dennis? What is it that they're trying to accomplish right now?
Well, I mean, I don't really correlate those two as far as just because they were first round picks. I don't link Hayden with Irving. I mean, Hayden was well before this new regime got here.
Well, yeah, no doubt. It's just one of those unique things to have it happen twice in a decade for a team to release first round picks.
Hayden is a surprise to a degree that he was released. I mean, it was no secret they were trying to move him. He just didn't fit what Greg Williams wanted to do, or Greg Williams didn't think he was up to snuff physically and that he wasn't going to be able to, play up to the standard that Williams wanted or needed. So, and they'd rather give the reps to somebody else. I'm not exactly sure who that is right now. Maybe Body Calhoun slides in there. Who knows? But the bottom line is Hayden was a good player for the Browns when he was healthy. But that was a big if, because he wasn't healthy all that often. Wasn't incredibly dependable the last couple of years. But a good citizen, always a big Cleveland fan. I mean, I like Joe Hayden. I got nothing against him. The fans shouldn't either. Should wish him well, except, I guess, against if he plays for the Steelers or the Ravens or the Bengals. So the Hayden one, I look at separately than the Irving one. The Irving one is obviously
hold on,
a bust.
I mean, Irving in a second, because I want to follow up on what you just said about Joe Hayden. I found it interesting, Dennis, your description of Joe Hayden, the first rounder who made two Pro Bowlers. You said he was a good player when healthy. You didn't say great. Did he underachieve and underperform for what the expectations were for him when he was the first rounder out of Florida? Considering what he was supposed to be, he was supposed to be, I think, in a lot of people's minds, that forget about throwing to that side of the field kind of shutdown corner. You know, Revis Island, Sherman, you know, Peterson today, guys like that in the past. He was supposed to be that guy. Even when healthy, Dennis, I don't think that he ever got there to that level of elite cornerback status. You described him as good when healthy. Explain that.
Yeah, I think his ceiling was very good for a while, but he wasn't a lockdown corner as the way you described it for a full season. I know he had one really good season. I can't remember exactly which one, but there was one where, you know, all the stats supported it, and he played really, really well. That was as close as he came to that lockdown definition. It's hard to say to this point that he's underachieved, because I think he has dealt with more than his share of injuries, and I think he played hurt a lot. Okay, he played less than 100%. Now, I recognize all NFL players have injuries, and 99% of them play less than 100%. They go out there. So I'm not saying he was the exception to the rule here. But the bottom line is, as a cornerback, you know, you better have your legs underneath you. And it seemed like sometimes he didn't. You know, certainly the groin was bothering him one year. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, you know, if the ankle wasn't bothering him another year. He also dealt with concussion issues. So it's sort of it's an incomplete type scorecard with Hayden, because the times when he was healthy were so fleeting, especially in the past few years, that, you know, it's difficult to remember that he was good for a while. But I don't want to say underachieved. I just want to say, how about unable to live up to the hype, if you will, for a sustained period of time.
Yeah, I think that, and there was a lot of hype. There was a really, really high expectation.
I mean, the effort, Bob, the effort was there. The effort was there. That's why I don't want to use underachieved. He tried. He was absolutely bought in to being a Brown. I mean, that was never in question. His effort level was never in question. He was a good soldier, good pro. It just didn't work out for him health-wise long enough.
Okay, so now let's get to Cameron Irving, who is just an outright disaster. He couldn't play center. He couldn't play guard. He was trying to tackle this time around. Can't do that either. Talk about a flop. I mean, he really, really is up there, in my opinion. I cannot believe, Dennis, that they got a fifth-round draft pick out of the Chiefs for him. To me, he's up there with Trent Richardson. He's up there with Barkevious Mingo. He's up there with Weed Manziel and Gilbert as one of the real first-round flops over the course of the last three, four, five, six seasons. They have just had so many flat-out flops where their talent evaluation system in the front office of that club, and I know there have been many many iterations of that that front office, but they have just missed on so many guys, and that's why a franchise that has had as many high picks as they have that should be in the playoffs by now under a true rebuild is still as moribund as this 1-15 team is.
Yeah, I mean, Bob, you and I have watched a lot of Browns football over the years. You're a football savant. I think you're going to agree with me. I don't recall seeing a worse offensive lineman than Cam Irving. I mean, I know there have been some bad ones that have come through here. There's no doubt about it. But I can't recall a guy who was so overmatched virtually from the start. I mean, the new group, I mean, Tashi Brown was around when Irving was drafted, but, you know, Hugh Jackson, he inherited Cam Irving, and it's like, okay, they tried everything with Irving. You know, I mean, they tried to move him around the line. They tried to find a spot that he would actually be competent in. And he was atrocious everywhere they moved him. And, you know, so it got to be an untenable situation. Yes, he's absolutely a bust here, you know, in Cleveland. Now, maybe he figures it out in Kansas City. Maybe one of the coaches there said, hey, I got the fix for Cam Irving. You know, all he needs to do is X or Y or Z, and he'll be fine. Somehow I doubt it, but maybe that's going to happen.
You're right. There might be some fantastic coaching point somebody notices and says, here's what your problem is. Oh, look at that. That's why they talk about a change of scenery sometimes being good for a player, just because somebody else, maybe a pitcher who can't get it done someplace, suddenly figures it out somewhere else because another coach looked at him. But I'm with you. The odds of that are very, very long.
I'm just amazed. Because I really hadn't followed his career at Florida State. I mean, I didn't know much about him. I'd heard his name because Winston was taking, you know, snaps from him. But I was sitting there going, okay, they get Cam Irving. They, you know, he must be good. And he never was. And so I'm wondering how he ever blocked anybody in college to get enough of a reputation, enough of a resume to be drafted where he was, because you could have fooled me. I mean, if I were watching him, let's say I did not know where he was drafted or how the Browns had acquired him, and I set eyes on him from the moment he walked into the building or Lou Groza on the field, I would have said, this guy's going to be out of a job in a matter of days. He's terrible. And he never, you know, they gave him a chance, more than one chance, because of where he was drafted, and he continually failed. So I guess the change of scenery is the only hope for him to turn it around, but yeah, it turns out to be a bad pick, a terrible pick, and of course the Browns become the butt of the jokes because of it.
Yeah, because it's another one of those terrible picks, as we can run down that list. By the way, for those scoring at home, Cody Allen just struck out Aaron Judge to end the first game of the doubleheader, so the Indians beat the Yankees for the second straight time, for those who are checking on that. Now let's talk about Toledo's favorite quarterback, and I think we'd all have to agree, Central Catholic product Deshaun Kizer, winning the starting job in Cleveland is a bit of a surprise, given the fact that he was a second-round pick, given the fact that there were some questions, at least from his college coach, as to whether or not his maturity, and I think he must have meant football maturity, because I don't think anybody who has listened to Deshaun Kizer speak or watched him carry himself would talk about his maturity being personal. It's got to be a football maturity. But at any rate, a lot of people felt, and I was one of them, that he should probably learn the game a little bit as a rookie on the sideline and kind of figure it out from there. But apparently he absorbed the playbook and the entire offense fast enough that he is indeed going to start against the Steelers in about 10 days. Are you surprised, and how do you feel about going into the start of the season with a rookie second-round pick?
I guess mildly surprised, because I think I said to you on the air last week or the week before that I thought that Jackson would go with Osweiler to start the season, let him fail, if he was going to fail, okay, fine, let the veteran fail and then, you know, bring in Kizer. But the more I thought about it, the more I said, why not? You know, I mean, obviously Hugh Jackson likes DeShone Kizer. Okay, that's number one. And he's sort of taken him under his wing. I'm sure if you got Osweiler off the record or maybe on the record, he would say, you know, the so-called competition in camp was unfair. He's probably saying, you know, I didn't get a chance. But at the same time, you know, Osweiler didn't exactly blow anybody's doors off. He didn't dazzle. He wasn't an incumbent. You know, he was coming in from somewhere else. So he had, you know, he had to prove something. It's not like somebody had to knock him off. He had to prove something along with everybody else, and I guess he didn't do enough. But I think what Jackson's saying is, look, I drafted Kizer, or I was responsible for drafting Kizer, or at least, you know, I put in a good word to draft Kizer, however you want to do the semantics of that draft. Mm-hmm. And I've liked what I've seen from him. He's a smart kid. He works hard. He looks the part. He talks the part. He walks the part. He does everything. You know, he looks like a guy who belongs, okay, short of any experience. So Jackson says to himself, do I want to start the season with Osweiler and see what happens, or do I want to go with the guy that I think can potentially be, if not a franchise quarterback, a quarterback who can grow into a winner's role? I mean, who can be a guy who will deliver victories. Might not be Tom Brady or whatever, but could be, you know, could have a high ceiling. We don't know. And he said, I'd rather roll with that from the start, let him take his lumps, and let him learn on the job, then have him sit there on the sidelines and then plug him in if something were to go wrong with Osweiler, plug him in, let's say, week six or something. Get a head start on that rookie year, or a start on the rookie year that's at ground one, you know, game one, and let him learn, and hopefully, when I say I, meaning Jackson, if I'm right, this growing pains that he goes through this year will pay off later. That's what the hope is.
Dennis Mandeloff joining us, talking a little bit about big NFL news today from Cleveland. Joe Haden, the longtime cornerback and fan favorite out there, released outright. He is free to sign with any club as of 4 o'clock today, and a lot of early reports say he could be a Steeler before very long. Also, Cameron Irving traded and DeShone Kizer. Dennis, you say, you know, and I get your point. I think you articulated it very well from Jackson's point of view, perhaps, on what he is thinking with this. And he's going to take lumps. You use those words. You know, he's going to take his lumps. How many lumps are you expecting? What I mean is, how well do you think DeShone Kizer can play as he learns this league in the AFC North, starting out against a Steelers team, while not the Steel Curtain of old or even the championship-caliber team of a few years back, still was ninth in quarterback sacks last season. How lumpy is it going to get for DeShone, not only in Game 1, but, you know, in the first half of his first season?
Well, I would say to Kizer is fasten your seatbelt because, you know, I mean, it's not going to be easy by any means. We know the Browns are not a great team by any stretch. I don't think they're the dregs of the NFL, even though they're coming off 1-15. I think you can find worse teams, especially given that the Browns look like they're going to have a defense that's exciting to watch. But they're still bottom third of the league. I get that. So you have to deal with that. You have to deal with, while the line has been rebuilt, your skill position players, you know, your supporting cast is not necessarily a cornucopia. You've got unproven receivers other than Britt. You don't know what Coleman's capable of. Made a couple of nice diving catches to bail out Kizer, you know, against Tampa, but you're not sure about what you've got in Coleman. So there's a lot of uncertainty in the receivers room. There's uncertainty in the tight ends room. You figure that Crowell's going to be able to run the ball a little bit, but you know, if he gets stacked up and you have to throw the ball all the time, are you going to be able to do it? So the odds are against Kizer having success right away, all right? But that doesn't mean if he doesn't have the success, that doesn't mean you flush him. You know, I mean, there can be cases where, you know, statistically he doesn't look great, but to the eye test, he looks like he's improving. looks like he's making strides. He may put throws on the hands that are dropped. He might throw balls that look like they were terrible throws, but it was a miscom with the wide receiver because the wide receiver didn't run the right route. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that we're not privy to that the coaches know. So it's very possible that Kaiser's making strides week over week. The wins aren't there. The numbers look a little ugly. I take you back to the Tampa game. You know, he was what, 6 of 18? And, you know, the numbers weren't good, but Jackson said, hey, I saw a lot of things. The numbers were deceiving to a degree. There were some passes he made that the receivers should have made a better play on. And it didn't sound like he was necessarily making excuses for Kaiser. He was simply explaining that stats aren't always going to tell the tale. So I think that Kaiser has the ability to make progress in his rookie year, even while he's, you know, struggling, if that makes any sense. And the wins might not be there either. So you're going to say, well, oh, Kaiser's 0-6 is a QB, or 2-4 or 1-5, you know, how much success can he be having? Well, maybe he is if you take away the wins and losses, you take away perhaps the completion percentage, and you focus on stuff like, you know, pocket presence, footwork, release point, timing, you know, those type of things, and game feel, guys in the huddle,
Dennis,
saying, hey,
Dennis,
this guy's got
some. Let
me jump
in with breaking news, if
Sorry.
I may.
Uh-oh.
According to Adam Schefter minutes ago, Steelers expected to sign former Browns cornerback Joe Hayden to a 3-year, $27 million deal, including $7 million this year, sources tell ESPN. Can you picture it now? Opening day, 10 days from now, Joe Hayden lining up opposite Corey Coleman, trying to lock down the young Browns receiver, wearing a Steelers jersey. My goodness, I can't even picture that in my mind's eye.
I thought you were going to tell me, can I envision a pick six by Hayden on Kaiser at the goal line or something?
And then there's that, yes.
Listen, I mean, good for the Steelers. Well, I have nothing ill. I have no ill will toward Joe Hayden. I'm not one of those guys who's going to dump on Hayden. And I'm not going to dump on the Browns organization, specifically Greg Williams. I mean, Greg Williams was not here in the glory years of Hayden. Greg Williams came here, the defensive coordinator, and he inherited a guy who, in his mind, is not, you know, a top-caliber corner. Because there's no question if Hayden were really, really good, Williams would keep him. I mean, in Williams' mind. And that's the guy that matters, the defensive coordinator. So, you know, I have no issues with Hayden. I have no issues with the Browns for moving on from Hayden. You know, we had a reaction when Justin Gilbert signed with the Steelers, and we were sitting there going, oh, you know, here it is. You know, the Browns flop pick, and he goes to the Steelers and dominates. Well, that didn't happen. So, you know, it's possible that Hayden doesn't succeed in Pittsburgh. It's not that I wish that he doesn't, although now that it's Pittsburgh and I'm a Cleveland guy, of course, I kind of wish that he gets burned a few times. Deep down, the Cleveland fan in me roots for it. But best of luck to Hayden there, you know, and good for the Steelers, I suppose. But I'm not going to – I don't have any ill will or ill wishes toward him or the Browns organization on the Hayden front.
No, of course not. But tell me what your gut is going to feel like if he does have a pick six of Deshaun in week number one. Literally his first game in a different jersey than a Browns jersey in his entire career happens to be a black and gold one. And if he happens to make a play, for goodness sakes, that's going to be hard for everybody to take. I'm with you. I wish him no ill will. But he is playing with the Steelers, so a lot of Browns fans are going to wish him ill will simply because of that part of all of this, even if it's not personal. It's just so ironic how some of these things turn out. All right, D-Man, last thing, we'll just before we let you run, since we got you on the phone from the CLE, from the 216 over there, six in a row for the Indians, two straight over the Yanks, tremendous pitching performance today in a 2-1 first game of the doubleheader. Have they hit their proverbial stride, and are they peaking now a little too soon, or do they have more of this left in them in September?
I think they got more left in them. I'm beyond impressed by this group, especially given the injuries, and that's why I say they have more left in them, because they don't even have their main, you know, some of their main pieces are still out. Brantley, Kipnis, Chisenhall. So, you know, on the position player front, and of course Andrew Miller on the pitcher front. So, this, and Salazar is out too, although I've never counted on Salazar necessarily, but Andrew Miller is obviously an enormous piece that you need back and should be back by, you know, mid-September at the latest. This team is rolling. They shouldn't, and I'm not saying this just because they're rolling, but because I've been watching these guys, you know, for a while here, obviously. I've watched almost every inning of the game. I'll go back and watch it after our hit. I watched game one of this doubleheader. But this team is really good, and they don't have to, they don't have to take a backseat to any team in the American League. For starters, you know, when you look at the American League landscape, okay, they have the second best record in the league, only behind Houston. Who knows what happens with Houston? And by the way, thoughts and prayers out to there. I mean, the whole Houston weather situation, much worse than any, you know, anything we can imagine. And sports is obviously no big deal when it comes to that. But
can you believe what the Rangers did, by the way? You know what? Finish your thoughts on that comparison for a moment, the Indians and the Astros, if you will, and then I want to ask you about that Rangers situation.
So there's an asterisk to a degree. If the Astros fall apart, you can understand why, or if the Indians catch them, let's say, for the best record. But even if the Indians don't, even if the Astros hold on to the best record in the league, the Indians don't fear the Astros. Not that they would go into a series cocky or arrogant about it, but they've took 5 out of 6 in the regular season. They don't fear them. So I don't, and plus the Indians have the experience from last year going all the way to the World Series game 7 against the Cubs. So I don't think they have anybody to worry, to not worry about, anybody to fear in the American League. And then when you look at the entirety of baseball, obviously the Dodgers with Kershaw coming back healthy, that's a load. I mean, if you see them in the World Series, there's reason to be nervous. The Nationals can be really good if they get Harper back. And the Cubs, of course, can't be counted out because they're the defending world champs, and they're loaded too, underachieved to a degree. But bottom line, though, on any one of those, I don't think you genuflect at their altars either if you're the Indians. You think you can beat any one of those guys, any one of those teams. So this is a team that's totally capable of not only getting back to the World Series, but winning it.
Fair enough. Dennis Mantloff joining us. Just a quick little breakdown on the Indians there. I just wanted to get your comment. This has nothing to do with competitiveness now. Just decency. You probably well know the story. Everybody does. The Astros were supposed to be playing the Rangers in a series in Houston. They have two series left against the Rangers. The second-to-last series of the season, I believe it is, was then supposed to be played in Texas, and essentially it's in Arlington. And essentially what the Astros asked the Rangers to do is, can you swap with us? Can we come to your place now while Houston is underwater, and then you guys come to us second to last week of the a series of the season? And instead of saying, of course, anything you need, your city is in a terribly, you know, horrific situation. People are dying. Other people are displaced. It's going to take them months to recover. It's going to take some people years to recover financially. For those who lost loved ones, they're never going to recover. Of course, we will do that. Texas said, no, we want our home series late in the season. Let's go play this down in Florida. You lose your home games. We're not swapping with you. We'll go down to Tampa and play at a neutral site. To me, it's one of the most disgusting, reprehensible responses, especially at a time, D-Man, when so many sports figures are giving just the opposite. Wonderful responses, tremendous responses in the wake of this tragedy and this historic biblical flooding in Houston. So many people rising up, making massive donations and helping in any way they can. The Rangers, to me, I don't know, they're wearing literally devil's horns right now.
Bob, I'm going to punt on this one. I know you don't like to hear me say that. I don't have enough of the facts to have an informed opinion. I'll let you say yours without a counter because I don't know enough of the facts. I haven't looked into it enough. It certainly sounds bad on the surface with the Rangers, but I don't know what their thinking was, so I'm not privy to it. I don't want to make a comment on it that way.
Well, it's not your fault you have to punt. Your quarterback got sacked because Cam Irving was in front of him. All right, that's it.
Yeah, different sport. Yeah, sorry about that.
Thank you, my man. Always a pleasure chatting with you, Dennis.
Thanks, bud.
You got it. All right, tell you what. We still have a lot of business to take care of here, and as long as we – you know, I mentioned this before about Matthew Stafford having to throw 57 touchdowns. If he does – That's a pretty good get for your fantasy team. And that's my segue into FanDuel. The NFL preseason nearly done. The regular season nearly here. Fantasy football with FanDuel is back. That's right. FanDuel Fantasy Football is for everyday fans like you and like me. You don't have to be the fantasy expert that's been putting out rosters for 10 years, running their own leagues. You can play as a beginner or a younger veteran or a king of your own league. No matter what level you're at, you can play FanDuel. There's new contests starting every single week. No busted seasons because one of your prime picks got injured in week one. And guess what? There's something for everybody. Plenty of contests to choose from starting at just a dollar. That's right, a buck. Pick a contest, choose your roster, and watch your score in real time. Fantasy football for everyday fans. You are absolutely going to love it. I love it, and I'll tell you what. You know, Kush, you know who one of my first big fantasy plays is going to be when we get to week one? It's going to be Toledo product and new starting running back Kareem Hunt of the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm very much looking forward to production from him, and he's going to have a very, very good rookie season. Keep your eye on Kareem Hunt. That is something, just a little kind of peek behind the curtain when I start making my first lineup picks. Over 2.5 million players have won cash prizes playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. Be one of them. Sign up today. Go to FanDuel.com, click the Join Now button, and use my code France. That's right. New users get free entry into the NFL Sunday Million with over $1 million in cash prizes when you make your first deposit on FanDuel. Just go to FanDuel.com, sign up with the promo code France, F-R-A-N-T-Z. That's FanDuel.com, promo code France, void where prohibited. We're right back after this on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Alrighty then, final segment of the extravaganza on this Wednesday. And you got plans for this evening? You make your dinner plans yet? Do yourself a favor. Get out to a Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill, the brand new location at Franklin Park Mall. It is tremendous, authentic Mexican feel and authentic Mexican flavors. It's all brand new inside, too. The bar, the booths, the tables, the chairs, everything. Tremendous atmosphere. Beautiful lounge to kick back and have a few drinks before sitting down for dinner. And the best part, get there by 6 o'clock and take advantage of happy hour pricing. They have happy hour every single day. Not just on Wednesday afternoons like today, not just on Tuesday nights, but literally 7 days a week from 3 to 6 p.m. Insane drink specials. They do have specials on Tuesdays, by the way, called Taco Tuesdays. Tacos for just a buck. You got to get out and experience Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill. Don't forget the original location in Maumee on Dussel Drive, but the brand new location is at Franklin Park. Now, it's not in the food court. It's on the Monroe Street side between JCPenney and Dillard's, directly across from Nick and Jimmy's. You enter from the outside, and you are going to love Don Juan Mexican Bar and Grill. Now, at the Franklin Park Mall. Jim Cushlin, breaking news, as we just kind of talked about a few moments ago. Joe Haden is now a Pittsburgh Steeler. And also we got a statement from Cam Irving, who has been traded by the Browns to the Kansas City Chiefs. Turns out that Cam Irving wanted to be traded. He demanded a trade from Jimmy Haslam so he could be the man on his own offensive line and wouldn't have to play in the shadow of Joe Thomas. So that's what Irving, I guess, apparently demanded in his trade, which is what ended up with him as a Kansas City Chief.
Oh,
so,
that's too good right there. I love that.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait. Hold on. Let me double check my sources here. Oh, wrong Irving. Sorry.
You're thinking Irving with an I, not Irving with the E.
Wrong Irving there. Okay. I knew we had a little bit of a convolution of stories there. In all seriousness now, I had to just throw that in there. In all seriousness, what do you make of Haden as a Steeler?
My first thought is, well, that didn't take long. I mean, we were just talking.
His agent said it. His agent said it this morning. He'll have a new team by tomorrow. Turns out he had a new team 6 hours later.
Right. Yeah, 3-year, $27 million. So what I find fascinating about that is that's not much lower than what the Browns were going to owe him. It is less than what the Browns would have owed him.
About $4 million less.
Right, about $4 million less. The only positive, I would say, for a Browns perspective is now that somebody else has signed him after being released, there's less of a cap hit in what the Browns would have to owe for this. But Joe Haden still has some left in the tank. He really does, and I think we're going to see it in spades. I mean, you and Dennis Manilow just a few minutes ago ending that conversation with a few jokes about, he's going to get a pick six right at the goal line or something. That would not surprise me. I mean, honestly, with the Browns being the first game,
I think it's guaranteed. I think it's guaranteed, Jim, because you know what this is? This is just, you know, whenever we have Dennis on, when something stupid happens to our friends, and you're in my roots, of course, are in the CLE, but you know, they call it an only in Cleveland moment,
yep.
You know, and there have been many, 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 many only in Cleveland moments. That shadow really only was lifted for the first time in, you know, a half century or more when they actually won, you know, and beat the Warriors 2 years ago, and they finally got their parade. But so
and it made us
many
feel all good
CLE
in the
moments, whether it's Game 7 in Jose Mesa in 1997 or running into the Braves pitchers in 1995 or the fumble and the drive and the shot and on down the line we go. It's always something, and I still don't think that is dead. And it's almost a lock, particularly when it comes to the Browns, who have not had their moment the way, you know, it was the Cavs who made that happen out there.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it's almost a lock. Joe Haden will pick number one draft pick. Well, not number one. Take that back. Number two, second round draft pick, DeShone Kizer of Central Catholic and from Notre Dame. In week one, his first game against his old team, in his first game in a Steelers uniform, and go the distance. It's almost a lock there will be a pick six off of DeShone Kizer. And I say that with no joy. I say that with no hope. I say that with no desire. I don't want to see that happen. I want to see DeShone Kizer be a stud in his first NFL start. I want to see him prove Hugh Jackson right,
mm-hmm.
that he was the man instead of Brock Osweiler. I want all of that to happen. But just the law of CLE averages over there tells us that Joe Haden will cover Corey Coleman tight, or he'll bait DeShone Kizer, the rookie, because of his veteran instincts. And remember, he has seen how Kizer throws because of practice, all camp and mini camps and everything else long.
Oh, and with him just signing, too, there's no way he's going to appear in the Steelers preseason game because everybody plays their final preseason game tomorrow. So the next time he's out on a football field for live game action will be against the Browns.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And like I said, Joe Haden, having watched DeShone Kizer, knows how he reads plays, knows how he throws. Watch him bait Kizer into throwing somewhere in his zone and then jump it and go the other way.
Yeah.
It's almost a lock. It just... And I know that's the cynic in me, Kush, but that's just I can just.
No, I grew up with that same cynicism, so I see it too, and I can easily picture that happening. I do find it interesting, you know, you're bringing up the only in CLE kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, because of the Cavs title, in 2016, a year ago, it still softened the blow because nobody, not you just now, not myself in the last year plus, have mentioned the what happened to the Indians of the World Series. You know, had the Cavs not won, that would have been the next peg on the whole thing. But we don't even bring that up even now because the one title made everybody feel better for at least a little bit.
Yeah, that's exactly right. For a little bit, you know, just in terms of if you live there and if you're a fan of the teams, plural there. But if you're a Browns fan, the suffering has not ended. It hasn't softened anything. You know that, Jim. The championship was followed. The championship in one sport was followed by 1-15, the worst franchise record in franchise history. You know that,
yep.
That's you know for the football team. So it's not going to be any better for them. It's just a really a crazy thing to think about. But there it is. Joe Haden is now a Pittsburgh Steeler. It couldn't have gone any other way. I mean, honestly, couldn't have. The only thing that could have been close to matching that, I suppose, it would be if he indeed did what all of the other Browns did back in 1995 and went to Baltimore.
Yeah.
And literally moved to Baltimore. That would have been the only other thing is if the Ravens had signed him. And, yeah, just another Brown who became a Raven. All right, so there's that. Anything else that we needed to put the lid on today? Oh, did you see the Mays jerseys?
Yes.
Tomorrow we're going to talk Michigan. Who do we have on for Michigan preview?
Tomorrow we're going to have John Jansen. He's part of the Michigan IMG Sports Network, which, of course, this season, once again, you can hear all your Michigan games, sister station 98.3 Nash Icon this year.
I didn't think I would like them, but I saw them, and I kind of like it.
I do, too.
The Wolverines,
like
for the first time, are going to wear Mays jerseys rather than their traditional blue or their white away jerseys. They're going to wear Mays on Mays. Tomorrow, it's going to be like the mono, you know, what do they call that? The monochrome, what does the NFL do on Thursday nights? I think it's called monochrome. Isn't it one color?
Yeah, I think that's a term.
I
could be wrong.
Call it.
But that sounds right.
Yeah, and if they don't, they ought to, because that's what it is. Anyway, they're going to do maze on maze, and I didn't think I would like it. It would look like pukey in some way, but I actually think it's kind of cool. And the Wolverines going to do that in their season opener against the Florida Gators. So that's going to be kind of cool.
That'll be fun, too. And by the way, speaking of programming update, I mentioned the Michigan. Yes, tomorrow we'll also hear from Jason Candle, head coach of the Rockets, because in addition to Ohio State game day, it's Rockets game day tomorrow.
That's right. All kinds of great college football action for the teams that we cover and care about the most. Elon, Toledo, and Elon tomorrow. So we're looking forward to hearing from Coach Candle tomorrow. And then, of course, tomorrow the Buckeyes take on Indiana as we have Paul Keels previewing that. So we're kind of previewing everybody that we can. We also had Mike Jinks on Monday to talk about BG. And then tomorrow, as you mentioned, John Jansen will join us to talk about the Wolverines and the Gators. All right, that's it. That's all the time that we have. Music is playing. Good conversations all day long today. Let's have even better ones tomorrow. Thanks for being with us, and stay where you are, because Drive Time is coming up next right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.